and welcome once again to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner. It's the 27th of September, 2005. Keep in mind, people, we moved the shortwave on the 3rd of October. That will be 11-9-20. That's 11-9-20. That will be WWRB 11-9-20 shortwave on the 3rd of October. The 3rd of October happens to be World Habitat Day, October 3rd from the United Nations System, World Habitat Day. And if you want to get a hold of UN documentation, thanks to DJ, we have 800-253-9646. Get UN publications, 800-253-9646. Everyone should get a copy of Agenda 21. Very, very important to do this. We should have Dennis and Darren on the second hour today. I wouldn't be concentrating on the phone calls as much as listening at this point in time to what they have to say and what I've uncovered through various directions. Certainly, the Gulf states have been occupied early in a test of NATO's rapid reaction forces. According to the Anti-Communitarian League, a coup d'etat in America is going on. Foreign troops have invaded under the guise of humanitarian assistance, listeners. This is the problem. You're not hearing this on the major news. And the United States is an, quote, early test of the alliance's much-heralded NATO Response Forces, NRF, a rapid reaction fighting unit created to allow it deploy in troubled zones across the globe within a matter of days, end quote, according to Reuters. And this is just amazing, people. The United States asked NATO on Thursday for help in transporting European aid to victims of Hurricane Katrina amid concern that assistance is not getting through to the devastated region quickly enough. The U.S. seeks more NATO help in Katrina, according to Reuters, September 8, 2005. Quote, NATO ambassadors were expected to take a decision on the request on Friday, September 9th, and a mission could be mobilized within 3 to 5 days, which is the 12th through the 14th, of an agreement on what was to be transported, end quote. So here we have this situation going on that we're never hearing about by the major press. So FEMA and new hurricanes threaten constitutions in several U.S. states. We have a state of emergency in 40 states, reported by Dennis. It appears that Mexican troops arrived on the U.S. border the night before Bush asked for NATO assistance, and the mission was mobilized way before the 3 to 5 days after the NATO agreement. So the Mexican troops part of a different agreement. And this is a very valid question that everyone should ask. Quote, a convoy of 45 vehicles and 196 soldiers arrived at the border city of Nuevo Laredo Wednesday night. That was the 7th of September. It was to cross into U.S. territory early on that day of the 7th. And you have General Francisco Ortiz Valadez told reporters as his men refueled at a local gas station, end quote. Very interesting stuff, people, that we connect today. Stay with us. We'll be back to continue.
I cry for my country, for the pain that it's been through. She's been made to suffer for the profit of a few. Storm clouds are out forming.
Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. Peter Myers has this from Time Magazine, dated July 20th, 1992. It's cited in the Free Trade is about creating a world state. Quote, the internal affairs of a nation used to be off limits to the world community. Now the principle of humanitarian intervention is gaining acceptance, end quote. Then we see here, quote, three former high-ranking government officials. This is another direction, listeners. Once again, three former high-ranking government officials from Canada, Mexico, and the United States are calling for a North American economic and security community by 2010 to address shared security threats, challenges to competitiveness, and interest in broad-based development across the three countries, end quote. Creating a North American community, Chairman's statement, Council on Foreign Relations press release, March 2005. So are we building a North American community, listeners, out of this disaster, or created disaster, as many believe, including myself? Quote, quote, sponsored by the Council on Foreign Relations in association with the Canadian Council of Chief Executives and the Consejo Mexicano de los Santos Internacionales, North America is vulnerable to several fronts. The region faces terrorist and criminal security threats, increased economic competition from abroad, and uneven economic development at home. In response to these challenges, a tri-national independent task force on the future of North America has been developed, or has developed a roadmap to promote North American security and advance the well-being of citizens of all three countries. Is this not incredible? When the leaders of Canada, Mexico, and the United States met in Texas recently, they underscored the deep ties that shared and shared principles of the three countries. The Council sponsored task force applauds the announced, quote, security and prosperity partnership in North America, end quote, but proposes a more ambitious vision of a new community by 2010 and specific recommendations on how to achieve it, end quote. You see how a weather war is going to help to implement these directions, listeners, as we would not normally accept this unless we are on our knees financially. And certainly we've seen Bush shaking hands with a Mexican Marine. But the Associated Press only explains that the Mexican Navy is assisting in Katrina cleanup. In Spanish, Marina means Navy, and maybe that's the confusion. The Associated Press describes the photo as, quote, in this image provided by the U.S. Navy, President Bush shakes hands with a Marine from the Federal Republic of Mexico, Monday, September 12, 2005, in Biloxi, Mississippi. The Mexican Navy is assisting the U.S. Navy in providing humanitarian assistance to victims of Hurricane Katrina, end quote. So what are these, listeners, but foreign troops on U.S. soil? And certainly this should be alarming to most, because you aren't hearing any of this on the major news, are you? So today the people, quote-unquote, in charge of the U.S. need the Canadian and Mexican Navy to clean up after our disasters. And it's obvious that these foreign soldiers are, quote-unquote, helping, and we think that's very nice of them, but it seems very odd to us that we don't have Americans down there cleaning up after the storm, especially when they need the employment. Local citizens are being relieved of their Second Amendment rights to bear arms, and certainly I covered some of that yesterday. And at the same time, foreign troops are invited into our country to give us internationalist humanitarian aid. Certainly these troops are armed. And according to Masur Girl, M-A-U-S-E-R, there are also Dutch and German troops in New Orleans. They're unarmed, apparently, and are all there purely as aid workers. The Anti-Communitarian League, and I'm covering them right now, we're going to move to Unattractive very shortly. They followed Masur's lead and went to Technisches Health Work, where they tell us, and it's translated, quote, evacuation measures took place in close coordination with the American Disaster Control Authority, FEMA, and the European Union coordination head, Peter Kos-Klasson, end quote. That's the first time that they've heard there's an EU coordination head from the Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the OCHA, in the USA. The OCHA is the United Nations. So these troops are all unarmed European Union and United Nations aid workers. And who knew about this, listeners? Then we have NATO approving plans to deliver hurricane aid. United Nations also expected to increase Katrina funding. And that was way back on September 9th. Quote, deployment of its ships to the U.S. Gulf Coast will mark the first time the new NATO response force has been used for a humanitarian mission, end quote. NBC News correspondent Kerry Sanders tells us the Mexican relief ship Papalopan, or Papaloapan, is also a warship. Is the warship unarmed also, is the question ACL asks, the Anti-Communitarian League. The USS Bataan official website explains, quote, Bataan sailors became part of a multinational effort, a relief effort, by working with sailors from other nations to help the people of the United States in a time of need. The Dutch frigate HNMS Jan van Amstel, F-831, sent as many as 67 sailors each day into Mississippi to support the relief efforts. The Mexican amphibious ship Papaloapan, P-411, sent up to 100 sailors daily, and three Canadian ships, HMCS Athabascan, DDH-282, HMCS Valley de Quebec, FFH-332, and HMCS Toronto, FFH-333, sent up to 258 sailors daily, end quote. According to the Canadians at National Defense, quote, overall, about 900 Canadian forces, sailors, soldiers, and air crew constitute their contribution, or our contribution, according to them, to the coastal relief efforts underway south of the border, end quote. They also claim, quote, as part of Operation Unison, that's Operation Unison, more than 1,000 Canadian forces personnel were deployed to the U.S. on September 6th, end quote. Now, are any of them gone? And what are the plans for the future? How is this going to ultimately end result to where we are today as a part of the U.N. system, listeners? As our troops are in the Middle East and Afghanistan and other parts of the country and world under the guise of the U.N. system as well. For the coalition. It's a big picture that's in place, people. And that is the problem. We're not connecting dots the way we should. And without your connecting these dots, where do we go from there? From unattractive people, the Atlantic area, the U.S. Coast Guard, the Lanterra website, they talk about from its home in Portsmouth, Virginia, the Lanterra Command Center coordinates homeland security, law enforcement, and rescue missions that occur on the high seas across and outside district boundaries. What does that mean to you people? How do you connect the dots to what's going on at this point in time? As the direction continues to show itself in the newspaper, and we're going to get back to this direction, but here we see Rivers Group accepts poultry farms money. Companies sued by state donate $1.1 million. This reeks of Agenda 21, dated the 23rd of September. The Oklahoma Scenic Rivers Commission, that's the Oklahoma Scenic Rivers Commission, approved a resolution Thursday accepting $1.1 million donation from poultry companies. The donation is from Peterson Farms Incorporated, Tyson Foods Incorporated, Simmons Foods Incorporated, George's Incorporated, Cargill Turkey Production LLC, and Willowbrook Foods Incorporated. The companies making the donation are named in a multi-million dollar lawsuit in which the state accuses them of polluting eastern Oklahoma watersheds by using too much chicken waste as fertilizer. But the whole difference of connection on all these directions come to one foundation, the UN system in America. That's the unfortunate part about the situation we live right now, listeners. I'll be back to continue with the broadcast. Keep in mind Dennis and Darren on the second hour. Stay with us. Broadcast. We're going to continue with Rivers Group Accepts Poultry Farms Money, which connects very deeply to Agenda 21 and the Oklahoma Scenic Rivers Commission, river navigators coming out of that. Also, the U.S. Coast Guard Atlantic area, very, very important to consider the strengthening of the role of non-governmental organizations. That's not the one. There's a chapter devoted to women in sustainable development, and that is, I'm not able to remember exactly what chapter that is, listeners, bear with me, but let's take Barney and Marilyn real quickly, and we'll move along. Go ahead, Barney, how are you today?
Yeah, of course, regarding the obnoxious call you got yesterday about your product, one of the big disadvantages of shortwave radio is that a person or government agent can make a broad statement with the hopes of discrediting your entire program without any proof.
Yes.
Back in the 60s, Dan Smoot, who wrote the book Invisible Government, published a report quoting top doctors and scientists stating that water containing 2 parts or more per million of natural occurring fluoride in the water should not be used as drinking water.
Oh, boy, Dan Smoot was really on top of things, wasn't he?
Sure was. And the only way a person could prove that a water filter doesn't work would be to have it analyzed at a certified laboratory that was not connected with the government.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. And, of course, the main thing we got going for us is that the government needs a shortwave radio because the information they obtain is priceless. So it would take thousands of agents to gain the same amount of knowledge or information.
Well, I certainly hope that they monitor what I do because everyone's going to lose in this battle.
You might convert them.
I'm hoping. I always did.
Yeah.
I hope to convert those in the militaries in China.
Right.
To stop this totalitarian agenda.
We got to convert all the freedom-loving people of the world.
Everyone wants to be free, Barney.
Right.
And the way China was taken over in 1949, and it was encouraged by our State Department.
Well, it was not only encouraged. The General Marshall boasted that he disarmed 39... Master's Chinese Division with a stroke of a pen.
There you go.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Good research, Barney. Thank you. Keep in mind that Berkey Light, everyone needs to get it. If you purchase the Berkey Light and you want to support a show, whoever it may be, doesn't have to be mine. It's not going to break my heart if you have a favorite show that isn't mine. Absolutely. I know that's a reality that has to be dealt with, but whoever you want to have support with your purchase of the Berkey Light, be sure to let them know at the network that this is a case you want to support. And that new number for the Berkey Light is 877-605-9200. I've had a Berkey for 5 years, been using it on a regular basis. Tim has given his testimonial. You get a free sports bottle with the purchase of the Berkey Light, 877-605-9200, $259. Be sure to tell them what show you want to support with your purchase of the Berkey Light, listeners. Very, very important. Keep in mind, we move to WWRB shortwave, 11-9-20 on October 3rd. 11-9-20. October 3rd is also World Habitat Day from the United Nations. Back to this River Group accepts poultry farms money. It's just amazing. The companies making the donations are named in a multi-million dollar lawsuit in which the state accuses them of polluting eastern Oklahoma watersheds by using too much chicken waste as fertilizer. Attorney General Drew Edmondson has questioned the company's motives in making the pledge. Quote, the vote was bittersweet, end quote, said Rick Stubblefield, chairman of the Scenic Rivers Commission. Quote, we hope this is just one of many donations from other businesses, end quote. What is this going to further do to business and the poultry business as well? And then you have a bird flu epidemic on the horizon, or the sunset of our country and the world. See, under Agenda 21, we're not supposed to eat meat. We're going to be vegetarians in the future. In the resolution, the poultry companies pledge $5.05 million for a litter reduction program. The $1.1 million donation will be spread out over a four-year period and earmarked for stream bank erosion programs, installation of restrooms, and implementation of an environmental program. Stubblefield sent the request letter in August to poultry companies, government agencies, and congressional, county, and municipal officials in Oklahoma and Arkansas asking for money to help fund projects. Agenda 21 unfolding in my newspaper and yours as well if you subscribe and read it. We'll be back to continue. Back to the broadcast, listeners. Keep in mind, we still have continuing phone problems with the ISDN here, and we're on the phone today. Bear with us as we try to get this repaired. Global Action for Women Towards Sustainable and Equitable Development is part of Section 3 of Agenda 21, strengthening the role of major groups. That's the Global Action for Women Towards Sustainable and Equitable Development, Chapter 24, Chapter 25, Children and Youth in Sustainable Development. Chapter 26, recognizing and strengthening the role of indigenous people and their communities. That's why these demonstrations about illegal immigration are futile under the guise of the UN system, listeners. Chapter 27, strengthening the role of non-governmental organizations, partners for sustainable development. Chapter 28, local authorities initiatives in support of Agenda 21. Chapter 29, strengthening the role of workers and their trade unions. Chapter 30, strengthening the role of business and industry. Chapter 31, scientific and technological community. And then Chapter 32, strengthening the role of farmers. But let's get back to the Global Action for Women Towards Sustainable and Equitable Development. The U.S. Coast Guard, the Atlantic Area, Vice Admiral Vivian S. Cray, Commander U.S. Coast Guard Atlantic Area, and Commander Maritime Defense Zone Atlantic. That's Maritime Defense Zone Atlantic. Vice Admiral Vivian S. Cray, assumed command of Coast Guard Atlantic Area on July 16, 2004. She is the operational commander for all Coast Guard activities in an area of responsibility spanning 5 Coast Guard districts, over 14 million square miles, covering the eastern and midwestern United States, from the Rocky Mountains to Maine and Mexico, out across the Atlantic and through the Caribbean Sea, involving over 33,000 military and civilian employees and 30,000 auxiliarists. She serves concurrently as commander, U.S. Maritime Defense Zone Atlantic. That's U.S. Maritime Defense Zone Atlantic. She previously served as commander, 1st Coast Guard District, overseeing all Coast Guard operations in the northeastern United States, from the Maine-Canada border to northern New Jersey. And prior to that, she served as Director of Information and Technology of the Coast Guard as Chief Information Officer and oversaw the Coast Guard's research and development program. Earlier assignments include Chief Office of Programs in Coast Guard Headquarters, Commanding Officer of Air Station Clearwater, Executive Assistant to the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Commanding Officer Air Station Detroit, Operations Officer Air Station Boren Quinn, PR, Coast Guard Aide to President Reagan, and many other operational assignments as Coast Guard Aviator Vice Admiral Cray has flown the C-130 Hercules turboprop, H-65 Dolphin helicopter, and Gulfstream II jet. Vice Admiral Cray earned a master's degree from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, as well as from Central Michigan University, and a bachelor's degree from the University of Texas. Her personal awards include the Defense Superior Service Medal, the Legion of Merit, and the Meritorious Service Medal. This is who's in charge of the Coast Guard Atlantic Area, Vice Admiral Vivian Cray, fulfilling a portion of Chapter 24 of Agenda 21, Global Action for Women Towards Sustainable and Equitable Development. This comes under the Atlantic Area of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, people. This is the point. Coast Guard has been conscripted into Homeland Security, people. And there is the crux of the situation in many respects. Homeland Security created after 9/11. Actually, it was created long before 9/11 because the Roadmap for National Security was formed in January of 2001, which explained the formation of Homeland Security. So the point is, Homeland Security planned for, and all that was needed to pull this off was to create another Pearl Harbor, another incident to bring them into place. And there's where we are today. Then you have the U.S. Coast Guard Activities and Marine Inspection Office of Europe from the U.S. Coast Guard. It's a large, large system. And it's very, very difficult to get to the bottom of all of this, people. It's very difficult for me to even cover this, as it's so large. And you have the MTSA/ISPS Internet Guidance, which is an element of, once again, the MTSA-ISPS help desk that provides a one-stop shop for up-to-date information on implementation and enforcement of the maritime security regulations found in subchapter H of Title 33 of the federal regulations and various parts of Title 46 dealing with the automatic identification system. That's the automatic identification system at the international ship and port facility security code, the ISPS. much understanding of this is very, very vital to all of us, dissecting what Homeland Security is really all about. Not an easy job, not an easy task, especially if you don't have the ability to search with the Internet. Unattractive has done a lot of work, people. So you have activities of Europe or the U.S. Coast Guard. You have U.S. Coast Guard Atlantic area. You have Far East activities, Singapore. Far East activities, Japan. Then you have the U.S. Coast Guard Pacific area. PACAREA, P-A-C-A-R-E-A, which connects more dots to the Coast Guard and Homeland Security. In the meantime, when you wonder who is a tool of the dialectic, or who could be a tool of the dialectic, the Hegelian dialectic, to make you succumb to directions that are being planned for you to fall into. And this is by Nikki Rapana, on March 13th of this year. 20 signs you're a tool of the dialectic. That you think worshiping Gaia in the UN's Temple of Understanding sounds cool. That means you're a tool of the dialectic. And you get all your news from TV and print journalists who repeat government PR releases. That means you're a tool of the dialectic. You think balancing the Bill of Rights is necessary since 9/11. That means you're a tool of the dialectic. You think there's any difference between Republicans and Democrats. If you do think there's a difference between Republicans and Democrats, you are a tool of the Hegelian dialectic. Also, if you believe the official 9/11 report was written to keep Americans safer, that means you are a tool of the dialectic. And back to the U.S. Coast Guard, you have the 13th District, the headquarters in Seattle, Washington. The 11th District is in Alameda, California. The 7th District is in Alaska, Juneau, Alaska. And you have the 14th District in Honolulu, Hawaii. What is this all about, people? You have the U.S. Coast Guard Pacific area. They say the California Gold Rush brought a large influx of people west, and with it came abandoned ships, smugglers, and general lawlessness in the seaboard villages and cities along the west coast of the United States. The revenue cutter Lawrence was dispatched as the federal government's representative and made San Francisco its home port in 1848, beginning the Coast Guard's presence in the Pacific. Lawrence and its crew arrived on the coast and began their assignment as judge, customs agent, and whatever else was necessary to maintain order during the chaotic period. Today, the Coast Guard's Pacific Area Headquarters for Operations is not run from the deck of a cutter off the Coast Guard island of Alameda, California, just east across the bay from San Francisco. The area of responsibility of PACAREA, P-A-C-A-R-E-A, is 74 million square miles, ranging from South America north to the Arctic Circle, and west to the Far East. Streamlining measures have incorporated the staff units of the 11th District, which would be Arizona, California, Utah, Nevada, and the Pacific Area staff. This Coast Guard island is also the home of the Maritime Defense Zone Pacific, Maintenance and Logistics Command Pacific, Joint Interagency Task Force West, MSO San Francisco Bay, ISD Alameda, and 4 high-endurance cutters. The area's catch of resources include 27,000 people, active reserve civilian and auxiliary members, 10 high-endurance cutters, 2 polar icebreakers, 6 medium-endurance cutters, 27 HH-65A Dolphin helicopters, 14 HH-60 Jayhawk helicopters, and 29 WPBs and 12 buoy tenders. The Coast Guard's Pacific Area active duty men and women, reservists, civilian employees, and auxiliaries all continue to participate together as a team working daily on diverse missions. And how could these diverse missions meld into Homeland Security people and the loss of our ability to be armed to protect ourselves? The civilian population is to be disarmed. It's been disclosed since 1961, a State Department publication, 7277. Been written in public laws, 87-297 and 101-216, which was in 1989, public law 101-216, which is in the U.S. Code now, where the world is to be completely disarmed. And when you're completely disarmed, you succumb to all 40 chapters of Agenda 21 that are being crammed on our throats right now, and we don't even know it. And this is the problem, people. Most don't know what Agenda 21 really is and what it's really for and what its directions will entail. I'm upset about this on a constant basis. It's not pleasant. In the meantime, we have people that are subservient to the Hegelian dialectic on a regular basis. And when you are assigned, or when you are a member of the Hegelian dialectic, you think the radical middle and third way describes sexual positions, people. The third way is something that most people don't even know what it is. The third way. So, you are a tool of the dialectic if you think the radical middle and the third way describe sexual positions. You shop at corporate stores and purchase mainly imported foreign-made goods. Then you're a tool of the dialectic. You hire cheap immigrant laborers for all your household needs. Yes, if you do that, you're a tool of the Hegelian dialectic. It's not a pleasant thought that this is the way it is. It doesn't bode well for any of us if we don't understand the big picture in place. We're in the middle of a mess that's been created for us by members of the Council on Foreign Relations, is a great way to put it at first. If you want to increase our numbers, you try and make it as simple as possible. And right now, it's not very simple, is it? In the meantime, with what's going on in our country, with the disaster that's been planned for us and created for us, in my opinion, it only fits. They'll turn New Orleans into a wetland because it's going to be flooded. It's already been discussed in newspaper articles that they'll turn it into a wetland. The beat goes on. You have Habitat for Humanity building homes right now to be shipped down there. And October 3rd is World Habitat Day. You're a tool of the Hegelian dialectic, listeners, if you think the peace movement was created by peaceful people with peaceful intentions. You're a tool of the dialectic if you participate in the Neighborhood Watch, Citizen Groups, Volunteer America, and TIPS as well. You're a tool of the dialectic. Keep in mind, we moved the shortwave to 11-9-20 on the 3rd of October. You have World Habitat Day. The United Nations has designated the first Monday in October every year as World Habitat Day to reflect on the state of human settlements and the basic right to adequate shelter for all. What does that mean to you, listeners? Does it all sound warm and fuzzy? It is also intended to remind the world of its collective responsibility for the future of human habitat. How are the poor created, listeners? Wars and weather wars. The tsunami at the end of the year was more than likely a bomb set off to bring that about because of the result of what comes out of that. And who's in charge of the tsunami relief? Former President Bush. I'm sorry. former President Clinton, former President George Herbert Walker Bush, a major player today, still, in all that goes on, in my thoughts. As we try to do the right thing for our country, it's paramount in you doing research. It's paramount if you don't have a computer to do research. Well, certainly, there's a big disadvantage right there, listeners. You have to order from UN Publications, Agenda 21, 800-253-9646. That's for the UN Publication Office, 800-253-9646. Cost you about $30. Get it done, listeners. Time is waning. And once again, shortwave moves to WWRB 11920. Shortwave, 11920, October 3rd. October 3rd, people, is World Habitat Day. And the United Nations has designated the first Monday in October as that to reflect the state of human settlements and the basic right to adequate shelter for all. It is also intended to remind the world of its collective responsibility for the future of the human habitat. UN Habitat is delighted to announce that Indonesia has offered to host the global celebrations of World Habitat Day this year. The event is always celebrated on the first Monday in October each year to reflect on the state of human settlements and the basic right to adequate shelter for all. It is also intended to remind the world of its collective responsibility for the future of the human habitat. The theme World Habitat Day on October 3rd, 2005 is the Millennium Development Goals and the City. This theme, chosen by the United Nations, is to remind all of us that in the year 2000, world leaders meeting at the dawn of the new millennium committed themselves to launch a concerted attack on poverty, illiteracy, hunger, unsafe water, disease, and urban environmental degradation by adopting a set of 8 goals. Now, when you connect the dots to poverty, wars, weather wars, drought inducement, illiteracy, well, the dumbing down process has been going on since the 1930s in America. How else is it going to be done in the rest of the world? Hunger, drought, listeners, drought inducement, unsafe water. Well, there's water desalinization plants that can be built that aren't being built hardly anywhere in the world any longer because they say they're too expensive to build. Well, how expensive is a Russian tank, an American tank, a Chinese tank? And why can't they use water desalinization plants? Because there's a direction to depopulate the planet. Disease and urban environmental degradation by adopting these set of 8 goals, people. In September, the UN General Assembly held a 5-year review meeting to weigh progress on the 8 goals. UN Habitat is working with a number of international and civil society organizations, cities, and governments to realize Target 11 of Millennium Development Goal 7, improving the living conditions of at least 100 million slum dwellers by the year 2020. And there is a perfect example, listeners, of the Hegelian dialectic. They're also working together on Target 10 of the MDG 7, reducing by half the proportion of people without sustainable access to safe drinking water. Their global campaign in urban governance and their global campaign for secure tenure enhanced this work through a series of UN Habitat programs, mainly in developing countries that shoulder the heaviest poverty burdens. And once again, the Hegelian dialectic at work. Sheldon, welcome to the broadcast. Okay, let's hold Sheldon over to the next hour. Let's finish this up. In Indonesia, the agency is working with the government, other international and local organizations, and the communities themselves on 4 projects throughout the country. These are the community-based initiatives for housing and local development, co-build, in 12 cities. And the breakthrough urban initiatives for local development, build, project in 9 cities. A new partnership for local economic development across 51 districts covering a range of economic activities ranging from fishing and agriculture to handcrafts. The other program is, well, read it for yourself to see the reality of October 3rd upon us in just a matter of days. We'll be back. Stay with us.